Hello, and welcome to The Oscar Went To, the podcast that looks back at a year in film and sees what films endured, what films didn't, and attempts to figure out why. Please give it up for your masters of ceremony, Max Salim and Nick Mastad.
Rolling. Here we are.
What's the weather like there?
Like, fallish.
Do you have leaves turning and stuff and chill in the air?
Leaves pretty much turned already.
Okay.
It's about 6 Celsius. When I'm here, I only know the weather in Celsius.
Yeah, man, I don't know. Because Celsius, I'm trying to learn Celsius because they have the Celsius temperature. That's what they list. They list the definitive like climate change or global warming like temperature of like if the global temperature drops below blank Celsius, that's when things are irreparably fucked.
Right.
And I'm like, I got to look up what temperature that is in Fahrenheit. I basically got to learn Celsius. But so,
you know, Celsius is the one thing, like, obviously I have a lot of people around me that use the metric system,
mm-hmm.
and Celsius is the one thing that like nobody's good at flipping over to Celsius to Fahrenheit.
Okay.
You know, cause it's easy to be like, oh yeah, that's 3 meters away, you know?
Yeah.
Or like kilos, like you can kind of like do some very simple math to arrive to these, but Celsius, it's like, it's tough.
Yeah. I don't know the history of like Celsius and Fahrenheit and like why there's two different things, but it does seem like super, like it seems like very arbitrary in terms of like, yeah, the difference is like something like, what is it, 32 degrees or something?
Well, and because you're like, because like it's such a, temperature is such like a feeling, you know?
Yeah.
70 degrees means something
yes.
to me.
Yeah.
Only from experience.
Yeah, right. That's a good call. So, yeah, maybe temperature is like the most like sensual measurement that we have, because the rest of it is like, I'm sure there's a metric for smelling, but that's like probably too technical and only for like food scientists and stuff. Interesting.
Well, this is our, yeah. So this is not a podcast about the benefits and pitfalls of the metric versus imperial systems. It's actually probably going to be our least listened to podcast ever.
Yeah, like going into it.
Where we go over the English patient. So we can talk about whatever we want, because I can't imagine that anybody is going to like willingly click on a link that says the Oscar went to the English patient.
Yeah, we're going to have Oscar went to the English patient, parentheses, extremely conversational.
We trick people?
I think in order to just like get people past the barrier of entry that is going to be the title of this episode, I think we just kind of include extremely conversational. And I'm glad you read my mind, because I was just like, I mean, I have the categories. I have what I'm going to say, but I'm like, you know, it's like this is not the most intuitive episode. I'm not coming into this episode the most intuitive and impassioned I've ever been.
Should we just, I know, off the heels of Back to the Future too.
You're right. Jesus. Right.
Should we just name this episode like Inception, you know, just to get more people to click on it and then have them be disappointed.
I think that's fine. Yeah. Cause Inception also, we could maybe technically get away with like, yeah, you know, Inception is I don't know. I was trying to think of a way to like bend Inception into like, yeah, we're talking about ideas and instilling ideas into our listeners. So technically it's not lying. I don't know. That doesn't quite work, but yes, we need
to. We're incepting you to watch English Patient.
Yeah. Cool.
So the reason,
yeah,
or do you host, right?
I'll host. I'll do the spiel real quick.
I'm not giving up. I'm not giving away a hosting opportunity on the fucking English Patient. That's for sure.
Well, I'm glad you'll hawk it over to me. Hello and welcome to the Oscar Went To. This week, as a supplement to our 1996 episode, we are getting our scuba gear on and doing a deep dive into the desert. That is the English Patient. It was the 1996 hit and Best Picture winner. It was written and directed by Anthony Minghella. And I'm Nick.
I'm Max.
On this podcast, we like to look back at a year in film and decide what has aged well and what hasn't, and try to figure out why. If that sounds interesting to you, jump back an episode and listen to our in our feed and check out our recap of the year in film that was 1996. Then after that recap episode, we like to jump in into the depths and take a closer look at some of the films that piqued our interest from that given year. A quick disclaimer, our deep dive episodes such as this are no holds barred, and we will absolutely be getting into spoiler territory. So if you haven't seen The English Patient and want to, we recommend seeing it first before you listen to the rest of this episode. All right, without further ado, Max, 1996's absolute critical and commercial hit, The English Patient. What's your experience with this? Had you seen this movie before? I can't remember.
No. The reason this was like sort of mandatory that we watched this was because we both had it under the why was this considered good category,
yes,
of 1996, even though neither of us had ever seen it. So that's sort of, I think we can say that that's going to be a rule moving forward. If we ever both nominate the same film for that category, mm-hmm, but have never seen it, we have to at least do a little investigating for our listeners.
Yes, I agree. And to a cherry on top of this one, the fact that the why was this considered good, matching both our categories, being the best picture winner of that year is a shoo-in for we gotta assess this one.
Right. So I'd never seen this, but there was, and I'm sort of like joking. Everything I've said up to this part is sort of like joking about the movie. It's sort of like leaning into,
yes,
the stigma,
yes,
I feel like the movie has, because this is by no means the most egregious Best Picture winner ever.
No.
And we both hammered Braveheart a few months back.
Mm-hmm. Gladly.
And that was a bad movie, mm-hmm, that won Best Picture.
Yeah.
I feel pretty,
yeah,
pretty confident in saying that. Where this, I don't feel as strongly. I'm not like The English Patient sucks.
Right.
How did it win Best Picture?
Right.
I see how it won Best Picture, but it's just kind of meh.
Yeah. I mean, like, I mean, general first swat, like kind of broad brushstrokes about this movie. I feel like it's like I'm with you 100%. I think like any qualms and any sort of reason like why it hasn't stood the test of time, or you just don't hear it in conversation anymore, is because it's just like it can be largely attributed to kind of the barrier of entry of like, this is a long, heavy, dramatic movie. It's like in the tradition of like, I feel like Dr. Zhivago or Gone with the Wind, these like kind of really year-spanning epic in times of war sort of story, and it's not a movie that you're just gonna pop in. And I feel like that's probably not the only reason it hasn't stood the test of time, but I think that is the number one reason why we don't hear about it as much, is that it's just not the most accessible movie.
That's true, but I feel like those movies you just listed, and I'll throw Lawrence of Arabia in there,
yeah,
is another,
okay, yeah,
long war epic.
Maybe the best
that takes place in the desert.
Maybe the best analogy. Yes. Yeah.
Those movies, yeah, they're not like, hey, it's Friday night, like, let's throw a movie in. How about Bridge Over the River Kwai, perhaps? But I think that most cinephiles like ourselves, we can agree that those are like good movies.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. That's a good point. Within the genre that the English Patient is in, you're right. This it even within that genre doesn't stand the test of time very well. Good point. Fair point.
Because I'm also not above enjoying, and I think you know this about me, I can enjoy slow burns. I can enjoy long, sweeping epics that rely on their cinematography more than their plot. So this isn't like automatically a movie that I'm not that into.
Yeah, sure.
Just want to throw that out.
No,
there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I consider myself the same way. I mean, like, granted... You know, it sucks to, like, a movie like this, like Lawrence of Arabia or Gone with the Wind, or and this movie are best seen like in like a movie theater, certainly. Like, and granted, I know that's true for like technically all movies, but like particularly these like epics, it's like you really want the scope and spectacle of them is part of that experience for these movies. So to watch this on my laptop wasn't. It's just particularly hard to engage with a movie like this in any way that isn't on a big screen, like with an audience. So just real quick, to table set, this was written and directed by Anthony Minghella. It has a Rotten Tomatoes of 85%. On IMDb, it's 7.4 out of 10. And on Letterboxd, it's 3.5 out of 5, correct?
Yep.
Yeah. The budget was around $31 million, and it had a box office gross of $232 million. It was nominated for 12 Oscars for the year of 1996. It won Best Picture, Director, Best Supporting Actress to Juliette Binoche, as well as a bunch of technical categories, including editing. So this was like, I mean, this was truly a bona fide commercial and critical hit at the time. First impressions, Max, again, so you had not seen this movie, or you had?
No. Why do we keep going back to this? I haven't seen the movie. We both hadn't seen
Sorry.
It, which is why Sorry. It was a mandatory that we
got
we
you
do a deep dive into.
Sorry. Okay. I need to be better at like active listening, because like what my broad takeaway from when you repeated this is that like we both, it was just both like we both like were questioning why it was considered good. Got you. Okay, so you haven't seen it. What are your first impressions of this movie?
I didn't hate it, but it was a slog. I watched it in two parts.
Yeah.
I didn't make it all the way through in a single part, which was, you know, I think more of my fault for some bad timing, bad planning, especially with the new kid, and less because I was like, I have to turn this off. I can't keep watching it. So I'll give that caveat there. And yeah, it's like, you know, like it's an award season movie.
Yes. It didn't surprise me, like, in what it was going into it. It's exactly like what I thought it would be.
It is exactly what I thought it was going to be.
Which is tough. Like, that's like...
Like, never have I seen a movie I've never seen before, and it was more of what I anticipated to be than this, perhaps.
Yeah, again, like, my only recollection of the movie when it came out, and I think I mentioned this in our 1996 recap episode, was that my dad, I remember seeing the Seinfeld episode about English Patient when it first aired, and the reason that resonates with me is that my dad, there's a snowstorm and, like, bad traffic coming home from work, and occasionally when that would happen, my dad would just go and see a movie to, like, wait for the traffic to die down, and so he'd come home late, and I remember, like, my mom being like, yeah, dad's like going to see a movie to wait out traffic. And so I was watching this and I was like,
he'll be home at midnight.
He'll be home at midnight. Yeah. I mean, he chose the right movie to wait out traffic. This movie was fucking 3 hours, but I knew you were seeing English Patient. And then I remember when I was watching Seinfeld that night, I'm like, oh, that's the movie dad's seen. And so it was like, so that has just stuck with me for some reason. But this was like right before I like really like followed the Oscars, I think, like, yeah, I mean, I've never thought about this movie other than the Seinfeld episode, and gotta watch English Patient for the podcast this week. It was like particularly like, gotta watch this long ass like movie that I don't think is gonna be like all that great, and you know what? And like, we're shitting on this movie, and I think broad strokes were correct. I will say, the like broad takeaways from the movie, there is a really beautiful takeaway from the movie and like theme of the movie that I really dug, and we can start to get into that with like favorite scenes moments.
Sure. And like the thing is, for as lukewarm as we're being about this, I would, if we're operating on a binary system of good movie, bad movie, I would say this is a good movie.
Yeah.
It just doesn't excite me that much,
right,
as a viewer.
Yes. 100%. All right. Let's get into just like fave scenes, moments, stuff we liked about it. I'll start off, and like going into this, and I think I mentioned this in our recap episode, I knew David Foster Wallace had said about this movie that like the desert looked like a body. And for whatever reason, I remember that from an interview and watching the movie from the opening and realizing like that's like part of the movie. And that's like maybe the biggest part of the movie is like this like melding of like, that's what I loved about the movie. The closing monologue at the end where she said, I think it was at the end, where it's like referenced that we are countries, like our bodies are countries, like this is where everything is, and how he like claims like the spot on her neck where he's like, this is mine, I claim this is mine, and the very clear evocation of the body over the, like, you know, as we're getting shots of the desert and these sweeping things. I did love that. That was like the big thing I loved about the movie, and I really did love it. That was like really great. And I think broad, like really stepping back from the movie, that is like maybe the biggest takeaway from the movie. And I did really, really find that captivating and beautiful.
Definitely. Like I think that had I seen this in the theaters, the spectacle of the whole thing might have been powerful enough for me to look past some of the issues the movie has, or not issues, but just some of the things that are a bit boring.
Yes,
within the story, but it's beautiful. The desert is beautiful. The movie is beautiful. I love sand dunes in the twilight. I love big Middle Eastern sets from the 40s. My grandfather's Egyptian. I've been to Egypt several times. I love imagining old cosmopolitan Cairo before some of the communistic tendencies of the country took over. These sweeping landscapes, these costumes, these big elaborate sets. Awesome. Awesome. And had I been in a theater, maybe that would have been able to tip me over a little bit more than they were able to on my couch.
Yes. Yes. And I feel like maybe we can like talk about this in balance right now, because like, it's like that stuff is so beautiful. It was almost the inverse of that, how bland, like visually, the non-desert stuff was, like the color palette of this movie. And I imagine this is extremely intentional, but it's like the storyline and timeline that we get where he's burnt and being tended to by Juliette Binoche is so colorless and like gray, which like, again, intentional, but it was particularly like, it's like you can do this in a way. It looked like 1996, like a dated 1996 movie, like in this like really bland non-desert visuals. Like it was really
well. I think Italy is kind of beautiful in the movie too, but it's just that so much of what are we gonna call this? Let's call this the present.
Yeah.
In the terms of the movie,
yeah.
So much of the present takes place in that single grayish, whitish room that the sun doesn't really come into, that the palette is overwhelmed by this sort of like beige.
Yeah. Which,
and yeah. But I do think when you're like out in the city in Italy, when they're disarming the bomb, when they are, when they're in the church, when they're even out just in the courtyard, it's a little bit more alive. Like I'm not like, oh yeah, Italy's ugly and the desert's beautiful necessarily. But again, 90% of this is taking place in a white room.
Yeah. Yes. And like, and just talking about that white room, it's like, obviously even talking about this, it's making it clear that how intentional that is. Cause it's like the past is meant to be way more romantic and those are the golden years and we're reflecting, you know, the present sucks and we're reflecting on this happier time. So that's like intentional, but I guess I'm just saying like, even the stuff that's like in Italy and stuff, it's like, yes, Italy is beautiful. In this movie, Italy isn't that beautiful. It's like, I don't know. I just like found like the look of the movie sure. to be dated in a way that like Fargo doesn't necessarily look dated or,
sure.
So that just like struck me. I don't know like what affects that. Like, and even like the stuff where it's like they're in the biplane over the desert was so, it was like the desert stuff looked great, but like them in the plane was like aggressively fake and cheesy. Like it was like, oof, this is a little rough. Like to see like
when he's getting shot down,
or even any shot of like Colin Firth in a plane or Ralph Fiennes in a plane. Like it's like, it just like looks like they're, it just looks fake and it's like tough. I thought.
Okay.
Another thing I really liked. I mean, Ralph Fiennes is someone who has always been, I've always felt like I kind of missed his heyday. And like, so it's like as Voldemort, I've known him as Voldemort. I've known him as the Nazi in Schindler's List. And he's in the Bond movies and stuff. He's always been like a bona fide, like kind of like British acting legend to me. But to see him in this, I'm like, oh, Ralph Fiennes is like smoking hot back in the day. Like he's like truly like he's great in this movie. I mean, he's like he's really something.
He's super handsome.
I guess that's what I'm just saying is like watching this, I'm okay. Like, man, like he's got the haircut, he's got the jaw, he's got the eyes, he's got it going on in this movie.
Yeah. He's A-list movie star handsome in this movie, definitely. And he's a super talented actor. He doesn't do it for me in this movie, which we can get into later.
Yeah.
And I think that's more about the writing and probably the directing mm-hmm. than choices he's making.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. My favorite Ralph Fiennes movie is The Constant Gardener. Have you ever seen this?
Never seen Constant Gardener.
Okay. It's Fernando Marias, who also directed City of God.
Right. Love City.
And it's Ralph Fiennes and Rachel Weisz.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Am I saying this correctly?
Weisz, yeah.
That's my favorite Ralph Fiennes movie, which is like early 2000s. So a little bit after
that. Yeah. I forgot about that movie.
You know, I'm embarrassed, speaking of just like throwing facts around out there, mm-hmm. that I was totally wrong about the Robert Zemeckis cameo.
Last week
in Back to the Future.
Okay.
And, that's not Robert Zemeckis. It is a crew member. I think like the stunt coordinator or something like that.
Got it.
But yeah, that was a swing and miss by me. So I'm glad I have a quick second to throw that correction in here.
It says more that you corrected it than it does that you mistook it. Moving on. Cool. What else you got for stuff you liked?
I really like in the first 10 minutes of the movie, not including the very boring opening credit sequence where it's the hand just drawing the cave drawing that we connect later in the movie. But really a tone setter for this movie, those opening credits where you're like, and also where they like set, they like give you every single like producer and production designer and like associate producer. And you're like, holy shit. Okay. We're 6 minutes into this movie and I'm just like watching this drawing happen. But from right after that moment, for about 10 minutes, it's a pretty nice sequence. There is the plane flying over the desert, which you thought looked super fake. I'll throw it up to more like, I thought it was kind of like stylized.
Okay.
And the, when it's like setting up the story that this, we, this guy has been shot down. We're not really sure who he was, where he was flying, who the woman with the beautiful blonde hair is in the front seat. He goes down, he can't remember where he came from, who he is. And he's like getting kind of like passed along from like the Berbers to an army. And then he's like on the coastline of Italy. And then he's put into the back of the truck and all of this. I like had really high hopes. I, at this moment of the movie, I'm like, okay, this is beautiful. Interesting setup. Okay. Like a little bit of mystery. And shit, you know, this won Best Picture, you know, maybe I have the wrong impression of this thing going into it. And so about 14 minutes into the movie, I had pretty high hopes where it was going. And I thought maybe we were, you know, uncovering a little gem that has been wrongfully cast away by time.
Yeah.
But that ended quickly.
Okay.
But so that opening sequence, let's say from the moment he's flying over the sand dunes in the plane to when Juliette Binoche decides to put him in the old monastery.
Okay, cool. I can get behind that. And I do want to clarify, because I'm largely with you here. Because I did like the plane flying over the desert stuff. I really like that a lot. It was particularly the close-ups of the people piloting where it's like, that to me was like really like, ugh, what's this? But I loved the whole, like the planes flying over the desert and how that played into the theme of bodies and we are the countries, like it that I thought was like really resonant and beautiful.
I like when they dismantle the bomb.
That was not bad.
It doesn't go off.
That was memorable.
I feel like it was a nice juxtaposition between like the war is over, yay, but actually there's like still real imminent danger. And also it's like set up in a very 90s way where when she's like, Juliette Binoche comes to the door and she's like, can't you just this one day say you couldn't find Kip? And it really like made it seem like it was setting up that he was going to blow up.
Yes,
in that,
definitely.
Explosion. And so when he doesn't, you're like, okay, that, you know,
that's nice.
Whatever. It's not genius, but
yeah.
The movie kind of grabbed me again at that late point a little bit.
I agree with that. And I was like, it was pleasantly surprising to see that it was like a misdirect and that he lived was nice. Yeah. I mean, the closing monologue in the movie I thought was like really nice by, I think, Kristen Scott Thomas's character of like the many flavors we eat and the people we get to know and we are the countries, like that closing monologue I thought was really beautiful and resonant. And it definitely
agreed.
Definitely sucked me in. It was great.
Agreed.
Okay. Do you got anything else before I move on?
Let's move on.
Yeah, just to talking points. So, I mean, let's like we kind of touched upon it, but I think like the headline talking point for this movie warrants kind of diving a little deeper into it, which is the why this was the phenomenon that it was at the time, which I think like Oscar bait, it just checks all those categories of like a Best Picture winner. It's extremely prestigious. It has like the costume design, it has the orchestral score, it has the melodrama.
The cinematography, the sound design,
it's all there.
The like, I think you've brought it up before that like period pieces are ripe for Oscar season because they just naturally have to touch all these different categories.
Yes, yeah. And this movie just like totally, I mean, this is maybe one of the best examples of that. But it's just like strange because it's like, I wonder what this was like to watch this movie in 1996. Maybe it just speaks to the kind of the inexplicableness of like what's going to stand the test of time and what isn't. Because I imagine seeing this in December or January of 96, 97, it was probably like, this is a beautiful movie. It should win everything. I don't know. It feels very dated.
What's the culprit for not standing the test of time at all?
Part of it for me is that it looks dated. It does look like 1996, whereas like Lawrence of Arabia like looks gorgeous. This like has its moments, but it's not like, it's too plain looking, and it does look like it's from like the 90s. It has a dated look, and I don't know what plays into that, like in terms of if it was the film stock used or a camera or lens or what, but like it looks dated. Are you with me here a little bit in regards to like what I'm talking about, or is this like,
I'm not completely with on this part, and I actually think that most of this is like it does pretty good for a period piece.
Okay,
I think.
Okay,
and again, I think that maybe it would you know punch up a couple weight classes on a bigger screen. I felt that way. I felt like
I'm with you
20 times over the movie where it's just like, if I wasn't looking at my laptop right now, I think I would be blown away by the shot.
Yeah.
But because I am, it's not doing it for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you there. I guess it's like, even talking about it, like we were in the genre that this movie is, it's fine. It's like fine, but it doesn't come close to being like a top five of the genre, okay. You know?
Sure.
It's just strange. I don't know. You got any talking points?
Yeah, I do. I do have talking points because I have a lot of things that probably just aren't going to even necessarily fall. Like a lot of them are going to kind of straddle talking points and nitpicks probably. Mm-hmm. I think that a big problem with this movie is, and where it's lacking the most, is the characters kind of don't make that much sense. Did you feel this way?
Expand.
Like, I feel like the crux of the move of the film is, am I using that term right? The crux, what does that mean?
Crux, like the fulcrum, like the access of the movie.
Yes, yeah. The crux of the film is the relationship between Laszlo and Catherine, right? Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you're like, I found myself being like, is this a 90s thing that you don't need to flesh this out at all for me to connect emotionally to it? It's just the fact that they're both beautiful and that clearly Laszlo has been established as our lead. So we want him to win. We want him to get the girl. Mm-hmm. When in reality, he's like kind of an asshole. Mm-hmm. You know, like, why do you want Laszlo to get the girl and not, I'm sorry, we're doing a bad job.
Colin Firth.
This time. Yeah, Colin Firth's character is...
Jeffrey
Clifton. Why do we want Laszlo to get the girl and not Jeffrey Clifton? What is the emotional connection that Catherine and Laszlo share together besides they're both super attractive? I don't know, but the film doesn't really explain it all and just wants us to swallow the pill that like these two are meant for each other. This is a great romance, so let it be. When in reality, it's kind of like, yeah, this is like a marital affair that isn't like really justified in any way.
Sure.
Especially because like Gregory is like a good guy, it seems like.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it speaks to, yes, on paper, you're right. This is a good point. I didn't necessarily feel this way. And I think partially it's because the way Colin Firth plays it, he plays it kind of smarmy and plays into the angle of like, this guy's kind of a rube, a bit of a dweeb, and kind of like you just don't like Colin Firth. You don't like Jeffrey all that much. He's like, no, of course not. This is the other guy. And where like Ralph Fiennes is set up to be this like kind of brooding, no nonsense over it guy. I mean, I'm with.
Yeah, but this is so 90s that it's just like, okay,
yeah.
He has a good jawline, so he's our protagonist. So like,
yeah.
Just swallow the pill.
Yeah.
It's so romantic. Don't you see how romantic it is? And you're like, I need a little bit here. I need a little bit why Juliette Binoche is like this angelic-like figure, you know, deciding to take care of him. Like just all of this is just like the film hands it to us and expects us to just accept it. Mm. And I feel like in our 2021 eyes, it's like we need a little development here, you know?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I hear what you're saying. I didn't feel it myself. I guess I'm like trying to analyze like why that didn't occur to me. And maybe part of it was because this is strange, but because it is kind of a classic story, like this kind of melodramatic wartime sweeping epic type of story. And I knew it was based on a book. I kind of just like thought, especially with like the Hannah taking care of Ray Fiennes' character's name is Almazi. What is it?
Laszlo, right?
Yeah, but on...
I think his first name's Laszlo.
Laszlo.
It's like yeah. Count Laszlo Almazi. Got you. Something.
But like Hannah taking care of Laszlo, it was like... I just sort of, I don't know. It's just like, because it's like the table setting that happens in the beginning of the movie. I'm just like, okay, yep, this is what it is. I just like kind of accepted it where it's like, oh yeah, this is the type of thing that happens in these stories. Therefore, like, I just kind of like took it. But yeah, I can't combat what you're saying. It is like, there isn't really justification for it.
Well, I don't know, man. I just feel like this is the hands down the biggest flaw of the movie, that like the whole thing revolves around this love affair. But you yourself don't really understand the love affair. You're like, oh, great. Laszlo's an asshole. Mm-hmm. And then we're just like supposed to just accept this grand love affair.
Sure. You know? Sure. Yeah. No.
And yeah. If you don't buy the love affair, then your heart doesn't, you know, the emotionality of the movie doesn't really work. And you really need that to work in this movie.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's a fair point. I didn't shed a tear, nor did I come close in this movie. Yeah.
But this is all over the movie too. It's like when he's like, Maddox is dead. My great partner and best friend Maddox is dead. And you're like, who's Maddox?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Thanks for the flashback. That fucking guy that you were like standing around with that you didn't give us any inclination that you two were like some great duo together, or like you have roots that go back so far.
Yeah.
And I just felt like every step of the way, it's just like movie just is like, just accept this and it's gonna be great. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of like, wait, why am I accepting this?
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. I because to me it was just kind of a general malaise of like the broadest kind of scope of the movie like resonated with me, but the rest of it was so it was just a slog to get through of just like of images and characters and storylines and visual, like, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, it's like them like making love in the tub and like them like stealing away during the Christmas ceremony to like make love, like literally behind the, like the model, like the glass. Speaker. Yeah. I was like, yeah. Come on. And then like, yeah. And then like, Jeffrey coming up and like passing Laszlo, and Laszlo being like, she's over there, she's sick. It's just like,
yeah, and he's all like sweaty, yeah, and shit. Like, and you're just like,
smells like,
yeah,
sex.
Fuck Jeffrey,
yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, it's, yeah, like, you're well, like, he's none the wiser. It's like, it was just like so, it was cheesy. I mean, it was just like cheesy.
It's melodramatic,
yeah.
It's melodramatic.
But it's like,
the movie is melodramatic.
It's melodramatic. I will say, I think, because I like melodrama. Give me melodrama. It's like, because melodrama and cheesiness are often borderline this like synonymous. They get lumped together and they so often are the same thing. But melodrama doesn't have to be cheesy. And cheesy is the thing that I think really gives melodrama the bad name. Cheesy is like, cheesy is like the scene we just described of them fucking behind the window of the ceremony. But melodrama is like, I mean, I like melodrama. Give me the emotions. Give me the double crosses. Give me the lies and the love. But it's just, I don't know. It's like cheesy. I think cheesy is the word that maybe is why this movie is kind of limited to 96.
This is a good hypothesis, definitely. And I would venture to say that if you could buy into these characters, if you empathized with these characters, yeah, it would then cross the line from cheesy into melodramatic. And maybe, you know, you'd get off on the whole thing,
yes,
a little bit more than you are.
Yes, this is a really good point. Because, and like, even to go further down, just to finish this thought of melodrama, it's like, because it's like any movie we see is, it's like melodrama is elevate. It's like we want it. That's why we'll go to the movies. That's why we read stories. Is we want to see that. Especially like a sweeping epic like this, where it's like the melodrama is as much part of a story like this as is like the sweeping landscapes. So yeah, I think we cracked a nut here in regards to this movie of cheesiness being the...
What did you think about the story structure?
Admirable to the filmmaking that it wasn't a complete ocean of confusion. Like, for the amount of characters in the different storylines interacting with each other, like, and this is like, I think, personified by William Dafoe. the fact that that character was in this movie and like didn't like overwhelm or confuse things, like I thought like it was admirable that I wasn't completely lost halfway through this movie, because there's like they're really messing with you, like there's a lot going on.
I'm glad you bring this up, because I do think that like I said, the setup is good. Mm-hmm. You know, now we're in this old church, and our protagonist just has this book. And everything's like a mystery. And now we're going to start weaving these two storylines together. It has the, you know, it has the ingredients to be pretty intriguing. Mm-hmm. And I think that big kudos to the editor for making the whole thing stand up. Mm-hmm. I will say that this structure is also responsible for the slog that is the movie.
Yes.
Too.
Yes.
That when you are like, just when you're starting to get interested in the desert storyline, you're always like pulled back into this present day storyline. Mm-hmm. And I it's funny you bring up Willem Dafoe, because it's a good role. What's his name? Carvaggio.
Yeah.
He does a good job. Sorry, you might be able to hear my baby just screaming in the background.
It's kind of sweet coloring.
That's how real this is.
I love it.
We're not in our studio today.
But I mean, if it makes you feel any better, less charming, you may be able to hear the bandsaw that's going on the a block away from me. So, touche.
I like that you brought up Carvaggio's part in this movie, mm-hmm. because I think that I'm a little bit torn, because it's a good part, and he does bring a lot to the present day story. But I also think that if you just pulled him out of this movie, the whole thing might work better. Because in the end, you're like, why do I care? All right. Why do I care about this Carvaggio guy? Yeah. Oh, he's that guy. But then it never really pays off.
Right.
Oh, he was working with Jeffrey. Oh, but it's just random that he's here.
Yep.
I think ultimately you take his part out of this movie, you cut it down 30 minutes, and the whole thing might click a little bit better.
Yeah. I'm with you there. If there's one like one chunk that can be isolated, or storyline that can be isolated, it's that. Absolutely. Cause the length of this movie is maybe the most formidable piece of it, where it's like, come on, like even with like the overall message and theme being resonant and like admirable, it's like, cut this down. Take at least 30 minutes off this movie, man.
But again, there's a flaw within the movie, and I want to keep going back to, you don't empathize with the characters.
Yeah.
So you're like, let's keep this thing moving.
Yeah.
Because on the Oscar went to, we're not adverse to 2 hour and 40 minute movies. Some of the best movies ever made are 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Titanic is one of the best movies ever made. Yes.
Space Odyssey is one of the best movies ever made. And they do not make your butt sore like this movie
does. Excellent point. Caring about the characters. Yes.
I don't want to beat that horse to death, but I feel the need to, because it all comes back to that.
Yes.
It all comes back to that.
I know I mentioned this multiple times, just to mention it or just to like kind of bring it up definitively in the episode. The Seinfeld episode that takes place, that is about this movie, is the storyline, at least, is that everyone loves English Patient, and Elaine is like the only person who like hates English Patient. She'd rather see a movie called Sack Lunch. And and I recently inadvertently watched this episode recently, because it's been on Netflix and I've just been like watching Seinfeld. And it is, watching this movie now, even like watching it not really, only being very like kind of culturally, in the most general sense, aware of what the English Patient represented, which was like a self-serious, prestigious, like Oscar winning movie, watching English Patient, and then that storyline is just, it is ripe for comedy, because it's like the English Patient couldn't be more of a serious movie. It's like one of the most serious movies. It's a very serious movie, and it's very funny to like have everybody being like, oh, the English Patient, and have someone be like, nah, it's not very good, like it kind of sucks, was really funny. And I was chuckling.
How could you not love that movie?
Right.
How about it sucked?
Very funny.
I mean, this is a talking point I have written down, and I'll go off the heels of what you just said. Yeah. And this could be because I love Seinfeld. This could be because Seinfeld has a greater foothold in pop culture, in the zeitgeist, than the English Patient. But is the Seinfeld episode have a greater legacy than the movie has itself? Is it more remembered in pop culture because of the Seinfeld episode where Elaine hates it than on the merits of the best picture winning movie itself?
Lovely question. Fruitful, juicy question. So here's my instinct. Here's my knee jerk answer. It's because I feel like Seinfeld does have a greater cultural foothold than English Patient. I think because we're both the big fans of the show, I think you are I think you're familiar from what I've gleaned. Your knowledge of the show is far greater than mine because I appreciate it peripherally. And then we'll occasionally have bouts where I like binge it and really just like rediscover it. And like, I'm like, this is amazing. But generally speaking, we have a within like the world of this podcast, which is you and I, there's no question that it's like the Seinfeld episode. But I think generally speaking, I've started, you know, it's like younger people don't know Seinfeld. I've felt old recently talking to like a Gen Z person and then being like, oh, Seinfeld? Like, oh yeah, I don't know. Like that, just like not knowing that mean like wanting to explain episodes of Seinfeld to like a Zillennial. I'll just call him Gen Z. I'm not going to try to get away with using that
How
word.
Dare you? Yeah.
But I also don't think like, I would say, you know what? I'm going to say yes, just because I don't think that many, and on the same token, I don't think those like same people that maybe aren't as familiar with Seinfeld, they definitely don't know English Patient. So I'm going to say the Seinfeld episode as the greater legacy.
I think so too. And I had this thought watching the movie and it was really hammered home when I went to visit my favorite Letterboxd reviews. Ooh. That the majority of the reviews are sort of glowing about this movie, but about like, honestly, like 30% of them reference Seinfeld, yeah. Or they're like, I'm with Elaine, yeah. Or like, Elaine was right. I somehow think give another 10 years, another 20 years, and the Seinfeld episode will be more ubiquitous than the English Patient itself.
I can get behind that, and I really like that. Also, just a technical production question that maybe is unanswerable, but just given the schedule, so this movie like came out in November of 96. I don't know what the turnaround time for an sitcom.
I was wondering this too. Like I don't know when that episode came out, but the writers of Seinfeld were on this joke, you know, in a very South Parkian way where like they jumped on it right away. They recognized it as like sort of a strange cultural phenomenon of a boring movie that everybody felt the need to laud, and they made a whole storyline over it.
South Parkian is the perfect word for it. Okay, so this episode, so English Patient came out on, it was released in the States November 15th, and then the Seinfeld episode aired March 13th of 1997. So I think the timing worked out perfectly where it was like, because a movie that is like, has like a ton of Oscar momentum does have that like into spring, into March, like it's top of the box office because it's like been nominated and it gets that box office push. So it was like perfect timing in regards to like, this was like very much still a top of conversation movie. So yeah, good on Seinfeld. Damn, that's threading the needle there.
Last talking point I want to get to, also kind of nitpick, but don't worry, I have nitpicks too. We'll get there in a second.
To me, it's all good.
That you, I feel like you have taken the bait a little bit and you really like this theme that they're trying to push across of like war and nationality and internationality of country borders are not for thinking men. You know,
got you. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ownership.
Yeah, yeah.
These sorts of things. Definitely an interesting theme. Mm-hmm. One that I feel like the movie, it only expresses through a few lines of dialogue. It doesn't really embody this theme, which is really, it's really good. I wish somehow like it did a better job of exploring this and not just through like a couple lines of dialogue here and there through a monologue. Because it made me think what it wanted me to think, but I thought it did so in sort of a obvious way.
Interesting. Hard for me to respond just because, I hadn't distilled it down to like a word of like, nationality isn't for thinking men. I had more just kind of like felt the theme of like, we are the countries, our bodies are the land. Like we are everything. We are worlds in and of ourselves. Like that's like what life is. But to hear it put that way, you're totally right, because they have that conversation about like, I don't get it, get why it's like, why people like have this huge connection when like someone's from the same place as they are. Like when you're walking down the street in Canada and you see another person, do you just like every person you see, do you just freak out? And she's like, well, no, but in war, that, you know, being from the same place is a big deal. So it's like, you are right. They do like tap into it. And I guess in terms of like what warrants exploration, because it's like getting me to think about that and feel that peripherally and kind of like maybe in the moment watching the movie, it's not like overt to me, but it's like that kind of pointillism that like after, you know, when I'm going to bed after the day after seeing it, it's like, oh yeah, like this is what the movie's about. I really like that feeling. So like in terms of it not being explored in a more overt way, I guess it's just like that. I don't know. I know what you're saying, but it's like in terms of like how else it could be explored, I have a hard time coming up with. And I do really enjoy that, like kind of like really gentle. It didn't feel spoon fed. It was like trusting the audience and, you know, treating things the audience very intelligently and just kind of like, it's that powerful. This movie did do a good job of like kind of delivering that powerful feeling, which is like, me, the audience member, feeling like I'm like, oh, like here's what the movie's saying. This is you know, kind of pieced throughout the movie. It never felt like overt to me or schlocky in regard to like delivering its theme. I thought the mechanics of how it delivered it, I thought were really effective.
Okay, we'll agree to disagree on this one. I guess it's a tall task, but I feel like this could have been delivered more elegantly and perhaps more woven into the story than, and I felt to me like it was more just like put a few lines of dialogue in here to really like make sure everyone gets this.
Yeah. So, got you. And just so like, I, cause like it's very broad, cause I hear what you're saying. It's still very broad to me. Do you mean like maybe explore it in ways of like the storylines embody these themes a little more eloquently, like in a little, like in a more direct way, or like, what do you mean?
I think this is gonna be kind of a boring part of the podcast, I gotta say, because you know, I don't know if I could really address this.
I got you.
Without doing a brainstorm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And doing like a rewrite of the script,
I got you.
Perhaps.
I got you.
But maybe like some more plot points about like my visa's expired because Britain has now declared war, and so I need to go here. Isn't this so sad? Because we just want to go do our thing in the desert, and we don't see nationality between us. But now because war has started, like it's there.
Got you.
And I don't know.
Yeah. No. But I get.
Let's not beat it over the head. I don't think you're wrong necessarily, and think
likewise.
It's a great theme.
Cool. Okay. Can we splitting hairs? I mean, they're kind of
sure.
Blending together, which I don't mind at all.
Yeah, they are blending together. The makeup, kind of tough.
Yeah, sure. It looked like a suit, like rubber. Yeah.
Why so furry?
Wait.
I kept like squinting, being like, why does he look so furry?
His scalp, you mean?
Yeah, just like his face. It looked like there was like fuzz all over his face.
Oh,
I don't know.
I didn't
it's
get
like
that. Interesting.
It could be my computer screen, but there's something just off with it. And either, I don't know, like dial it back a little bit. I know you, I don't know, man, because I know they're trying to be like, he's supposed to be so disfigured that you can't even tell that he's Laszlo. But as a viewer, you know, immediately you're like, that's Ralph Fiennes. So, and this is Ralph Fiennes. So this is the same guy. And just, I don't know, there was too many close-ups. It just lingered too long, and it just, you know, made me too many slow, quiet parts where you just had too much time, too many empty frames where you had too much time for your eyes to just go to the makeup and be like, what is this, you know?
Sure. Hang on, just real quick to your point of we weren't supposed to know it was Ralph Fiennes. I never got that impression.
I think the idea is like, if Caravaggio had encountered Ralph Fiennes at a dinner or something like that, he wouldn't know exactly who he is. He's so disfigured, he no longer resembles his past handsome self.
Yeah, yeah.
When Jeffrey tries to sort of kill Laszlo.
Yeah,
wow. I'm like, okay. She doesn't die, even though she's like in the front seat of that.
Front seat
plane gets like fucked up.
Yes.
And she's like totally fine except a broken ankle and a broken wrist. And it's like, I don't know about your plan. Like, I understand you can't really walk across the desert for 3 days on a broken ankle, but it seemed harebrained for him to be like, don't worry, I'll be back in 4 days. I'm leaving you in this cave in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
Obviously, that wasn't going to work.
Also, is it maybe I missed something, but like the way that's set up is that Jeffrey's like dive bombing him and we only see Jeffrey. Is it supposed to be like a crazy reveal that she's there? Because I felt like very flippant to be like, because he like runs over and Jeffrey's like gurgling on his blood and then it kind of like pans back and then we reveal that she's in there too. And it feels like kind of like, oh, fuck, she was in there. Like, but it felt like unemotional. Yeah. Like it was like sort of just like they like didn't get an insert of her there. I don't know. It felt weird.
That was melodramatic too when he like pulls her out of the plane and he's like, this is really gonna hurt, and then it's just like effortless. And again, anyways, nitpicks. If this movie, everything else was great about this movie, I wouldn't even notice this part, but I couldn't help but be like, okay, yeah, she's totally fine.
Yes. I also, now that we're talking about it, a Mount Rushmore moment of melodrama is a character pulling another character from any sort of wreckage. So this is like certainly checks that box big time. Cool. Do you have any other nitpicks, splitting hairs?
I really didn't like the rain scene when they take him out in the rain. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? When they're all like parading around in the rain after the war is over.
Yes.
I mean, I get what they were like probably going for, but at like 2 hours and 28 minutes, you're just like,
yeah.
okay.
I get you next. There. I do get you there. Not to be contrarian, that was a moment that kind of stuck out to me because I did like the juxtaposition of like we had happy music and it was like celebratory and it being in rain. Like I liked that it wasn't like, oh, it's sunny out and because like, and everything's happy. Like I did like the juxtaposition of like, not everything is like, when you're happy, it doesn't mean that it's sunny out. Like it can be, you can be happy in the rain, but I hear you. It was,
and just like, yeah, this thing is, again, it would probably be a scene that I like if the movie's really clicking.
Yes.
And it doesn't feel long at that point.
Yeah.
But it's not clicking in my opinion.
So it's
great. It's long.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is such a silly little scene to put in.
Yes. I can get behind that. If you have any other hairs to split.
No, that's it. I'm trying to, you sense me rushing a little bit.
No, but I mean, we're going along a good clip, but why?
I am rushing a little bit, but it's out of this like, it's out of this principle that I'm like, this final episode can't be over an hour.
Oh, gotcha.
For English Patient. There's like so many great movies we do that come in at like 56 minutes that I don't want people to be like, you know, click on English Patient, be like, all right, yeah, I guess I'll give this a try or whatever. And then it's like, you know, 2 hours and 40 minutes of us rehashing this movie that we're both equally uninteresting.
Interesting. I mean, I see where you're coming from. I will say that because the episode is over an hour doesn't necessarily mean that we're wasting time, because it's like, I don't think the episode that we're doing is inherently bad, even though we dislike the movie doesn't mean the episode's bad. It could be the opposite. It also means that like, you know, we can talk about something that is like, because the movie isn't like neutral. It is like more like I dislike the movie somewhat. So I think like it just like says like we can talk about, you know, maybe things we like, things that were awarded at the time that aren't that great warrants, you know, a fair amount of conversation. I also like, if we're like trying to get this thing in under 45 minutes, we're like, yeah, this episode sucks, which I don't think the episode sucks. I think it's just like, because the movie, we dislike the movie doesn't mean the episode is bad. Anyway,
I feel like our longest episodes are Children of Men and Back to the Future.
Yes.
And that's, you know,
but those are movies
the two are directly related in my little brain.
Yes.
Right now.
Those are movies that we adore. Most movies I think are like somewhere below that. But anyway, MVP, who you got? Singular thing.
Singular MVP of this movie is John Seale, the cinematographer.
Okay.
I went between him and the editor, but in the end I thought, okay, even though the editor sort of like kept all these jumbled pieces together, the movie still felt long and occasionally not confusing, but, uninspired. And I think the cinematography, even though you, think that it occasionally looks dated, that the strong suit of the movie is the cinematography. Cinematographer John Seal is my MVP.
Okay, I like that. Not dissimilar. My MVP is the desert. I think all the stuff like with the desert, particularly, is the movie, is what this movie's about, and it's shot in a beautiful and dynamic way too. There's a lot of variety in how it's shot and how it's presented. So I'm gonna say the desert is the MVP of The English Patient.
All right.
Okay. Legacy. We've touched upon this kind of throughout the episode. I mean, I'll say the legacy is commensurate. I completely agree with what the legacy is for this movie, which is like a movie that is more of a relic of what was awarded in the Oscars at the time this came out, which has not, you don't hear it in conversation much. You don't see it around all that much. It's not really in the zeitgeist other than being kind of, like I said, the relic. So I think the legacy of this movie is commensurate with how the movie is. How about you?
Yeah, I think the legacy of this movie is the Seinfeld episode it spurred 6 months later, and that's completely accurate.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm not going to say anything that, you know, it's sort of the sum of our opinions throughout this episode that it's, again, not a bad movie. It's probably a good movie. Is it one I look forward to revisiting? Is it one that I'll ever bring up in conversation being like, you know what a great fucking movie is? English Patient. No, that's not going to happen.
Yes, 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 100%.
I'd venture to guess, well, I'll never, again, it's a good movie. English Patient's a good movie, everybody.
Absolutely.
I'll never watch this movie again, I don't think.
No, I am with you there. All right.
Let's do something fun.
Yeah.
Next episode.
We got to do something fun. 96, there's too much fun stuff in that year to not do. So we'll do a real fucking juicy poppy movie.
Love it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening. Please hit the subscribe button on your podcast player. And if you have a moment and enjoyed the show, leave us a good review. We'd love to hear from you. If you agree with us, disagree with us, or have any of your own hot takes, send us an email or voice memo to theoscarwent2@gmail.com. And if we think you're onto something, we might play it in an upcoming episode. Also, as we just mentioned, if you have a film you'd like us to talk about from the year of 1996, shoot us an email and tell us why you love or hate that movie, and we'll consider it for our next deep dive. We are currently on the market for the next movie to do, so please let us know.
We'll put it in our show notes.
Put it in our show notes.
So you can have a second to, you know, maybe watch along the week before we deep dive into it. And tell you what, if you made it to this part of this episode, over an hour into the episode of The English Patient, you know, you're a true listener of The Oscar Went To. And if you see Nick or I at a bar and you give us the code word Laszlo, we'll buy you a drink because we'll know that you're a true listener of the show.
Code word Laszlo for 5% off your next high life. I love it. Yeah,
we are. And maybe this is like, it's baked into me because I'm sort of, you know, obsessive with my movie watching routines, which is I don't want to know anything about a movie going into it. I don't want to watch any trailers. I don't want to read any reviews, and I don't want to get any content about it. And then after I'm done with it, I really like to feast on all the information out there. So I just would never like see Children of Men on The Oscar Went To and then just listen to it without first revisiting the movie. So maybe these are my own, you know, prejudices.
That's good to hear. That's a very admirable regimen that you have. I admire that. I don't know that I have that discipline, but I respect it.
We know you don't with Toy Story 3 for sure.
No, I if I'm looking forward to a movie, I'm like generally soaking up at least a trailer to kind of like juice me up and get me through the months leading up. But that's neither here nor there. Well, it's a little bit there. But Max, it's been a pleasure. We will see you next episode.
Yeah, I'll see you next episode. And maybe if anyone out there is also reading Crossroads, we can do a little bonus episode where you and I really get into Crossroads because I'm only halfway through. But love to set aside half an hour to chat about some stuff with you.
I would too. And I literally finished it last night.
Oh shit.
Yeah. So I'm desperately books, especially books are something I understand the draw of book clubs. And I have like the past like 5 years where it's like when you're reading a book, it really you do want to like talk about it in a like with contemporary, you want to hear other people's thoughts. You want to dissect it. You want to discuss it, much like movies. But like books are so intimate and singular and not tied to like mass audiences that like you really need to kind of do, there's work to be done if you want to like commiserate about something you're reading. And Crossroads by Jonathan Franzen, definitely check it out if you're interested. Even if you're not interested, it's just like, it's a great novel.
If you're fucked up and you like fucked up in family stories of dysfunctional families, check it out. You'll love it.
This feeds into the melodrama devoid of cheesiness, because I would say that like his books, or at least his novels about families, are often borderline melodramatic, but they're not cheesy. You know, it's like a
devoid of cheesy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, and it's like, all right, all yeah. right. Anyway, Max, we could talk.
We'll sign up.
Yeah. See you we'll see you later. Balcony closed, etc.
Make like a tree and get the fuck out of here. Bye-bye. Peace.